call this meeting back to order. We're now moving on to item number six. Mr. Booth.
Thank you, Dr. Horn. First off, I want to appreciate you all for taking your time during this dinner break to hear the talk. Should the food arrive, feel free to let's break, stop, do whatever logistics are necessary.
No, that's my call. I'm sorry.
Very good. Then I will let you make the call. Good afternoon, Dr. Horn, other members of the board, Water Board staff, and members of the audience. My name is Richard Booth. I'm the unit chief of the TMDL Basin Planning Unit. And again, thank you for accommodating us during this hour. Does this microphone help?
Basically,
or would it be okay if I talk like this?
It might help behind you. It doesn't help us.
It does help?
Yes.
Thank you.
But pretend it's not there.
Of course. As I read my notes to the side here. And by the way, this just so you know, I'm going to speak, Dr. Ward is going to speak combined. Our presentation is 35 minutes. So
okay.
We'll try to shorten that if that would be helpful. We're here this afternoon to hear about bacteria sampling and analysis, along with some background. The sampling and analysis is part of a project that we call the Bacteria Water Quality Objective Project. There are at least two intentions to this project. The original intent was to consider revising our bacteria water quality objectives for select water bodies that do not meet the current standard. A second intent is to integrate our efforts with State Board's effort. They want to revise bacteria standards for recreational use statewide. Their proposed standards are less protective than our current standard. This presentation is a status report to give you an idea of what staff and contractors have accomplished so far. This presentation will also include a bit about what State Board is doing about their proposed revision of bacteria standards. My presentation is Enclosure 5 on Bates Stamp 6109. And if you're interested in browsing the web, you can find this agenda package on Lahontan's website on the Basin Planning webpage. Here are two questions staff would like you to consider and perhaps to provide guidance today. Now, your agenda package does not show this particular slide. This slide is a duplicate of one of the final slides. I've duplicated these questions up front, so you'll be considering these questions as we give our presentation. Are there some areas in our region that should be designated specifically for intentional consumption where the existing standard should be protected? Question number two, are there certain areas in our region where the existing standard should be relaxed? And by the way, you can ask questions during this presentation at any time. I want to say up front, please don't pick bacteria water quality objectives for specific watersheds this afternoon. We have more data on the way, including microbial source tracking samples that Dr. Warden will talk about. This microbial source tracking can differentiate the source of the bacteria between humans and livestock, and perhaps more. And so please note that we can demark specific water bodies much later. We're just asking for general input from you folks if we're going in the right direction. This is an outline of what I'm going to present, and instead of reading the outline, I'll just simply present it. Okay. Slide four. Water Board staff or our contractors such as the SWAMP folks, SWAMP is Surface Water Ambient Monitoring Program, have sampled water bodies in 13 of our hydrologic units, or watersheds, during or prior to 2013. Those units are shown in orange. Before the 2014 fill season, staff determined we should add the Little Truckee River hydrologic unit up here, and also add the Upper Mojave water body down here for some further bacteria sampling. Now, the surface water in the other 27 hydrologic units in white may have health risk from bacteria, but we do not sample these white areas because much of the flow in these areas are intermittent or ephemeral. There are few, if any, discharges that can provide data to us, and the water bodies in these units do not receive the same level of use. We cannot sample all of our water bodies, particularly with the recommended frequency of 5 samples in 30 days. I'd like to acknowledge at this time our newly hired scientific aide in the Basin Planning TMDL unit. His name is Taylor Courier, and he provided the maps for this presentation with his GIS skills, and he also helped with the data evaluation. These are the steps we're taking for the Bacteria Water Quality Objective Project. They're classic steps of any project management. We're in the early preliminary stages, really, of these first two, defining the need and the reasons to revise the objectives. The other steps are on their way. We're in the progress. I'd like to give a little bit of history at this point. 1975 Water Quality Control Plan, known as the Basin Plan, for the North Lahontan Basin applied the 20 fecal coliform per 100 milliliters of water, water quality objective, to 10 water bodies. In 1995, during the Basin Plan update, the Water Board extended the 20 fecal coliform per 100 objective to the entire region. The State Water Board and US EPA subsequently approved these standards for the Lahontan region. Now, I want to get into some detail here and read to you the definition of the current bacteria standard from the Basin Plan. I've provided pink sheets to you as a late addition so you can read along instead of listen to me drone, because it gets a little complicated. For coliform bacteria, waters shall not contain concentrations of coliform organisms attributable to anthropogenic sources, including human and livestock wastes. The fecal coliform concentration during any 30-day period shall not exceed a log mean of 20 per 100 milliliter, nor shall more than 10% of all samples collected any 30-day period exceed 40 per 100 milliliter. The log mean shall ideally be based on a minimum of not less than 5 samples collected as evenly spaced as practical during any 30-day period. However, a log mean concentration exceeding 20 for any 30-day period shall indicate violation even if fewer than 5 samples were collected. Now, I will use the phrase 20 geomean throughout this presentation. Geomean and log mean for these purposes are the same thing. The 20 mean water quality objective is not tied to a particular beneficial use. The 20 geomean is intended to protect all beneficial uses in our region, including incidental water contact as well as intentional consumption. So please keep that in mind. Okay, why is this a priority? Why are we talking about this? Number one, we have stakeholder concerns, primarily the ranching community, for example, the Bridgeport Ranching Organization. Number two, because of State Board's effort to revise the recreational bacteria standards that is underway. And number three, researchers have recommended switching from fecal coliform to E. coli as a better fecal indicator bacteria. And we agree with that. Dr. Ward has a bit on that. For these reasons, you picked this project as one of the top priority basin planning projects during the triennial review in January of 2013. And here we have a picture of recreational use in the Sierras. What is the concern? State Board is proposing to change the bacteria standard for recreational use to an E. coli standard and other fecal indicator bacteria that is approximately similar to 200 fecal coliform. This is an order of magnitude less protective than our current standard. They propose this change to be statewide. We are working with State Board staff to possibly maintain Lahontan's current 20 geomean bacteria standard for appropriate water bodies. Enclosure number two gives bacteria standards for other regions. Enclosure number four gives a US EPA fact sheet, two-page fact sheet, that are the recommendations that the State Board may adopt. As an aside, keep in mind that the various county health departments will post warnings at water bodies that exceed bacteria standards whenever they have such data, and those standards may or may not coincide with our bacteria standards.
You have a list of their standards?
I do not, and frankly, I'm not sure the process they use with which to post standards. If they have specific standards or they take other criteria into account. State Board's effort could supersede our 20 geomean bacteria standard for recreation use, where incidental ingestion of water is a concern. Now, if we want to protect water for intentional consumption, for drinking, we could designate a new beneficial use for such use and assign the appropriate bacteria water quality objectives. But we're still left with the possibility that the State Board's effort will supersede our recreation use water quality objectives. This is why we're actively integrating our bacteria water quality project with State Board staff, including providing them with this data and our evaluation. And it's the third bullet here of the recreation use for water contact recreation, that the State Board may have a less protective standard, and we want to consider whether we want to keep our current standard for such use. Lawton is a vertical region. It may be appropriate to designate the upper segments of a stream with our current bacteria water quality objective for drinking use and or for recreation use. But perhaps designate the lower segment of that water body with a less protective bacteria standard. Here we have the picture of one of our sample locations. This is along the Susan River. Dr. Bruce Warden will now present a compilation of data collected through 2013. I will come back after his presentation to give you a very brief preliminary evaluation of our water bodies and present the next steps. We hope to conclude this presentation with a discussion of the two questions presented at the beginning. Should there be areas to keep our bacteria standard, and should there be areas to relax our standard? Dr. Warden.
Thank you, Richard, and good evening, Dr. Horn and members of the board. My pleasure to continue this presentation. My primary purpose in this presentation is to cover the data which you have in your packet in enclosure one, at least summarize in a couple of slides. That there's some other issues that we'll cover, including why we are measuring indicator bacteria and not directly measuring the pathogens that we're really concerned about. A little bit of explanation on that so that it's clear why we do what we do rather than looking at those direct disease organisms. And then take a look at how we got the data, what data source was used, and why and how it was reduced to geomeans, particularly why. Also, I will present the data more or less as a snapshot because this is an ongoing project. We started collecting data for bacteria in 1989. The database that we use now, which is CEDIN, which is a public database and is subject to rigorous quality control, we could extract data from 2000 to 2013. So it's just part of all that we have. I'll go into that in a little more detail later. And finally, we'll cover some working hypotheses and preliminary conclusions that we can draw from this analysis. Uploading of bacteria data to CEDIN, as I mentioned, which is the California Environmental Data Exchange Network, is ongoing. Our in-house laboratory processes over 1,000 bacteria samples every year for the Bacteria Water Quality Project that Richard is heading, or SWAMP, the Surface Water Ambient Monitoring Program, and special 303D listing and delisting assessments. We use EPA-approved standard methods 9222D and for fecal coliform and 9222G for E. coli. I'm only going to present data for fecal coliform because it pretty much tracks the same with E. coli, and we have a lot more data with fecal coliform. But we have been collecting data for E. coli since about 2008. Statistical validity of raw data is ensured by rigorous quality assurance quality control checks by water board staff, then CEDIN staff, and typically takes up to 1 year to get data before the public. We have completed one bacteria contract with UC Davis and one with SNARL, which is the Sierra Nevada Aquatic Research Laboratory located near Mammoth, California. We have one active grant subcontract with UC Davis under the Proposition 84 Rivers and Ranches project, and three additional contracts with SNARL. Tasks for these active contracts include both indicator bacteria studies and microbial source tracking. Coliforms are bacteria that can metabolize lactose. It's a bacteria that's ubiquitous to the natural environment. You can find total coliforms almost anywhere. Fecal coliform is a subset of that. It's a thermotolerant coliform that exists in the guts of warm-blooded animals. So the chances of correlating with pathogens from these warm-blooded animals is much higher. E. coli is one of those fecal coliforms that inhabits the gut. Typically, it's a small percentage. I'll show a slide later that shows several other critters that are living in guts of warm-blooded animals. There are also some strains of E. coli that are either Shigella toxin that will give you gastroenteritis, or potentially lethal enterohemorrhagic genotype 0157H7, which can be lethal. This is like spinach, getting on spinach or something like this. When people get excited about it, it's that strain that can kill people, and actually has an action somewhat similar to what Ebola does to people.
Sure.
So what are indicator bacteria? These are kind of the likely suspects lined up here. Helminths are not so much in water, but can be. Typically, it's an egg from a worm that infests the gut, can live in the natural environment for over a decade, even desiccated, dried up in soil. The most common source might be from a sewage sludge application, but it can be in water. Protozoa include the big ones, and that would be Giardia and Cryptosporidium. They're small critters. They're not bacteria, but they cycle between humans and livestock, wildlife, and get in water, and can be quite damaging in terms of gastroenteritis, or possibly even can be fatal sometimes. Viruses, particularly enteroviruses, are present in water. There hasn't been a whole lot of research on it overall, but it's an up-and-coming area that people are studying, enteroviruses that affect human health. And then the bacteria I've already mentioned in the previous slide. Here's a list of various bacteria that are common in human and also pretty much animal or livestock guts. Escherichia coli is one of our indicator bacteria, probably is only 1% of the total of all of these. I should mention, though, that some of the other bacteria in there are disease-causing, depending on what it gets into and how it gets there. Staphylococcus, Streptococcus, Clostridium, a number of these can be damaging. E. coli is used as an indicator bacteria because it's easy to culture. All of the coliforms are easy to culture, so it's just a matter of convenience. You can culture, you can get good numbers. The microbial source tracking methods, 2010 method promulgated by US EPA, the two methods they use to differentiate human and ruminant, actually, but counts for livestock, use Enterobacter and Bacteroides, which are also on this list. So it doesn't have to be E. coli. Researchers will take advantage of whatever bacteria provides the kind of answers you need for the questions you're asking. We mentioned the Seed and Database. There's the website. And all data was downloaded from the Seed and Database on October 20, 2014. So it's a snapshot. Much of the data is from regional water board and swamp sampling efforts, but also includes data from other sources such as USGS, U.S. Forest Service, and contracts sponsored by the water board. As I mentioned earlier, years downloaded are from 2000 to 2013. 2014 is not available yet, and it is undergoing internal quality control right now. We analyzed over 3,500 raw bacteria data, which was reduced to about 1,500 monthly geomemes for 132 monitoring sites and 13 hydrologic units, which Richard has already discussed. Geomean data is exactly the same as log normalized data, which Richard mentioned, and it is a method utilized by the US EPA water quality criteria documents to smooth and statistically even out the high variability that's inherent in bacterial data in the natural environment. I'd also like to acknowledge my laboratory assistant, Lisa Petrusa, who makes herself available after regular business hours and on weekends to receive and process these samples from water board and swamp staff and processes the data for seed and upload. Without her, a lot of the data you're seeing here would not be in there. Holding times in our long region are only basically 6 to 8 hours, and she has to coordinate things and really does a good job getting the analyses done within quality control holding time. This data is specific to the West Fork of the Carson River, and that actually is one example of how you can relate elevation to bacteria concentrations. But when you look at the bacteria concentrations overall, the question being, is there an overall relationship between elevation and bacteria concentration on a region? The answer is no. We actually get kind of peaks and valleys when you look at that because we have high elevation pastures either with U.S. Forest Service allotments that have lots of bacteria or areas such as the Bridgeport Valley, which quite often have very high values. It's above 7,000 feet. So what we've learned from looking at this data is that you have to look at a hydrologic unit by hydrologic unit, and probably even within the hydrologic unit, you may have to look at individual water bodies from the headwaters down to the tailwaters, so to speak. In this case here, you can see the upper watershed going from the headwaters through Hope Valley and Woodford's. What is depicted in the boxes is the mean of monthly geomemes. So you see those are well below 20. Then down, actually, that location is Painesville, below Woodford's and between the state line and Woodford's. Number has popped up to 36. Looking at the sources along this trail, upper watershed between the headwaters and Hope Valley, it's primarily fishing and camping. As you go from Hope Valley into Woodford's, there's some private cabins. There's a resort. But those don't really seem to have much of a major effect on water quality. Between Woodford's Bridge and Painesville Bridge, though, there's in the Carson River Valley quite a bit of livestock. And this result is just one example, but it's consistent with what you see in the literature. Typically, in the literature, you will see that that upstream sites or reference sites have very little bacteria. Recreation has a little bit, and any livestock use typically has a lot. A lot of studies show this over a number of years, and many of them are specific to the eastern Sierra Nevada mountains. Now, this is a kind of generalized slide that shows the relationship between what we would call the source intensity. And by this, I would mention that this was developed by staff. We asked them to grade sites that they've actually been to and monitored from. Is this site a reference background site, which would be defined as a source, usually as wildlife upstream of human and livestock influence, or a moderate site, with smaller anthropogenic impacts, a source maybe a mixture of dispersed recreational activities such as hiking, camping, backpacking, fishing, or one with high anthropogenic impacts, source typically involving intensive grazing or urban environments or other intensive activity that might contribute to bacteria. So staff graded this. Sometimes they couldn't make up their mind and put it in between. Those are the points in between. But pretty much in this, looking at mean and monthly means, and this is based on real data from our region, it fell out this way. If you're at little or moderate categories, pretty much you're in compliance with the current standard of 20 fecal-coliform per 100 mil. In Richard's talk coming up, he'll show some red in there, red for where there was some exceedances. The method we use to determine impaired water bodies does allow some exceedances. So you may see some what appears to be inconsistencies, but there's stuff between those two different zones. The binomial model used to determine exceedances allows up to 10% exceedance for no effect, basically, and it doesn't count it as a impaired water body until it's about 25%. So there's a kind of a no-man zone in there where you can have areas where you get data that shows some effect, but not be impaired. So these are some of the hypotheses we draw from this assessment. We have four grants or contracts that include tasks for microbial source tracking that can differentiate between human livestock and wildlife. We have filtered and frozen many more samples than we can afford to run, and we'll have to pick and choose wisely which ones we do actually analyze to get the most bang for our buck, so to speak. Some examples of how microbial source tracking has been used, those samples we've assessed, Trout Creek in the Tahoe Basin. The question was, we haven't been able to delist the site because we keep getting high bacteria. Was it a human source, livestock source? Probably not a bovine source since the cows have been removed. It turned out on analysis it's wildlife. It's not, we were thinking there sometimes are populations of homeless upstream and that sort of thing. It pretty much was wildlife, lots of birds in the area and so on. On the other hand, a site in Bridgeport Valley, Upper Robinson Creek. A question as to whether it's human livestock there. At that particular, it's the upper part of the valley, but there is some limited grazing in the watershed above. There's also human activity from hot springs and all kinds of activity like camping and so on. And then there's a resort nearby that has a septic. Taking samples downstream of the resort and upstream pretty much determine that it's a septic issue. This is the kind of thing we can do to help refine what the problem is, then we can more effectively deal with it. Otherwise, quite often you have people pointing fingers at each other. It's those houses upstream and their septic. It's the cows downstream. Well, you can answer some of the questions, at least get some kind of percentage of what is the percent of source. Elevation is roughly related to source intensity in many watersheds, but analysis has to be watershed by watershed or stream by stream segment. There is a general relationship between source intensity and bacterial concentration. The data in, this is just a summary of the data that's in your enclosure one. There's 64 of 132 that are below, sampling sites that are below the 20 standard, and 68 of 162 above the standard. Samples in the Lake Tahoe Basin are pretty much below 20 consistently, and high anthropogenic use sites generally are related to livestock sources, and a much higher proportion of those are above 20. With that, I'll handle the...
Don't go yet.
Oh, question.
The 68 of 132 locations, those are all still under 100?
We didn't assess whether it's under 100 or not, but I could easily do that.
Oh, well.
It's in the data.
I was just wondering, because the graph that you showed earlier topped out at 100, which means that
you're
proposing something that's twice as high as what,
yeah,
we're seeing.
That plot, which, do you want me to go back to that or not?
You could.
Okay. That plot is
that
a mean
one.
Of monthly means.
Right.
So there are individual samples that go up probably, I think, to 900 in that. So there's a much wider scatter. That this kind of crunches that down and attenuates that all. But
I have a slide. Tell them that.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Richard has a slide.
Thank you.
Okay. So we will turn this over to Richard unless there's any other questions. This one is yours. Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Warden. That's the same slide he just showed, but I'm going to paraphrase it. About half of our sampling locations, not our water bodies, because as you saw earlier, we haven't sampled all of our water bodies, but half of those water bodies at sample locations, and several water bodies have more than one sample location. So of the sample locations, half meet our standard of 20 geomean, the other half do not. And like I say, not all of our water bodies have been sampled. I want to point out that the Bacteria Water Quality Project sampling philosophy includes sampling pre, during, and post activity. That is, the sampling crew tries to collect samples before an activity such as cattle grazing occurs, during the grazing, and after the activity later in the season. So therefore, exceedances may occur during the times of heavy use. We want that, or we expect that. We sample for that working hypothesis. Now, these exceedances may not be indicative of the water quality of that water body overall. We're currently in the stage of our project to evaluate that very question. And this goes to the question that I believe it was Mr. Sandell had. It's hard to read on this with all the bright lights on in the room, but what we have here are examples of sample locations with the fecal coliform analyses, the highest analyses collected at that particular location over the years, differentiated between less than 20 in green up to greater than 1,000 in red. And if the slide were better viewed, you can see there are several locations where we do have exceedances of 1,000 fecal coliform, not the geomean, but the actual number that does exceed. And again, because sometimes staff are purposely trying to collect a sample when they expect to have the highest number. And therefore, when I show you another series of slides and you see a bunch of red dots that are exceedances of 20 geomean, please do not assume that we're going to recommend that water body have a relaxed standard. It's simply a preliminary evaluation of the data we're showing you now while we're in the very stages of these analyses. These next 8 slides show sample locations and preliminary data in the watersheds that we have sampled through 2013. I will go through them briefly to give you a sense of the sampling effort. Remember the red dots that show sample locations with exceedances of the 20 geomean do not mean that entire water body or that segment should have a relaxed standard. We're in the process of doing this, what we call exceedance analysis, that Dr. Warden briefly mentioned, comparing these data to a binomial model that allows sometimes the 20 to be exceeded, but you can still conclude that the water body has overall good water quality. So here we have Surprise Valley, and we've got some sample locations. Hard to see. There's one up at that area. Here's a red dot showing, as we come down out of the hill, an exceedance of the 20 geomean, at least at that location. Here we have the Susanville area. Picture I showed you of a sample location where there were cattle grazing is one of these red dots right here along the Susan River itself. And you can see the river has frequent exceedances of 20. The Truckee River has been sampled at these locations. 2 green dots here, the red again meaning exceedance of 20 geomean, green means less than 20 or not an exceedance at any time. of the sample analyses. In 2014, we staff collected samples in the Little Truckee watershed because we had no samples in 2013 or before. This being a priority watershed, we decided to collect samples here and have done so. I don't intend to explain the land use. The legend here explains different colors that indicate land use. Forest land, urban developed land, sagebrush type land. That's all, of course, part of the analysis we do when we try to figure out why the bacteria is what it is. What's the land use? Tahoe Basin here, we have General Creek. Haven't had an exceedance over 20 geomean. Tillack Creek, Upper Truckee. This is Tillack Creek that Dr. Warden briefly mentioned, that the microbial source tracking has helped us identify why we have exceedances. Here's the Carson watershed. The stream profile Dr. Warden showed you is along here. You can see that the sample locations he delineated are these ones here that have not exceeded the 20 until you get down here closer to the state line and you have at least one exceedance of 20. By the way, I have hard copies of these maps. They're beautiful maps if you ever want to see them. They're gorgeous maps, and we have been using these maps for many purposes for our project. This is Bridgeport Reservoir, Bridgeport Valley here. Red dots indicating exceedances of 20 along these various streams. And of course, Mono. And we have the Owens Valley. This is very high up in the watershed, as you can see, almost along the Sierra Crest, and we have a couple locations that have had exceedances of 20. There's heavy recreation use, pack animals are up there, but again, we're only speculating right now. We have microbial source tracking samples literally in the freezer to be analyzed when we determine which ones should be analyzed. We standardly collect and do a filter process to give us the ability to find out the microbial source tracking data for just about every sample we've collected in the past year or two. But we're not going to be able to analyze them all, so we're going to have to be very selective with which ones we'd analyze to answer the questions about what bacteria source for that particular watershed or that particular location. This past spring, Victorville staff sampled three locations in the Upper Mojave Watershed in the San Bernardino Mountains near the Pacific Crest Trail. Pacific Crest Trail shown here in red. That's the trail. Those aren't bacteria exceedances. Thank you for chuckling. I appreciate that. The color red denotes the Pacific Crest Trail here, and there were only one or two exceedances of these samples taken in the spring here. So the working hypothesis, again, preliminary evaluation, is we're not finding that the heavy recreation use that this trail receives necessarily results in commonly exceeding the 20 geomean. So I would like to state that our preliminary evaluation, quote of the day, many of our waters are in compliance with the 20 geomean standard. Okay, I'd like to discuss the next steps. We will continue data collection and evaluation. The evaluation includes what we call metadata. These are field observations. What was present in the field at the time of sampling? What do we know about the land use? We have GIS layers to help us with that. Institutional knowledge. We know that the microbial source tracking can differentiate a class known as ruminants, which include deer, cattle, and giraffe. It's our institutional knowledge, I'm going to go out on a limb here, that we don't have a lot of giraffe sources of bacteria. So we can then narrow it down to just deer and cattle. That's a type of institutional knowledge. Again, thank you for chuckling.
Way to go, team. Yeah.
We propose, where am I, slide 32? We propose to establish as a proposal, beneficial use for intentional consumption. I briefly mentioned that in an earlier slide. That's down the road in our process here that we didn't necessarily have time to discuss today, but we're welcome to if you wish, that if we want to set aside and make a beneficial use where people intentionally consume water in the backcountry, either partially treating it or not even treating it and just drink it, taking their Sierra cup and drinking it right out of the stream, we may consider that as a new beneficial use and set water quality objectives that would be protective of that beneficial use. We may want to change our current 20 geomean, relax the standard if there are areas that we believe those areas cannot be achieved. If there are controllable sources that we can control and regulate or protect, we, of course, may choose to do so. If there are areas that it seems that would be not feasible, we can choose to relax the standard. This is part of our project. And finally, we would demarcate every single water body, or as Dr. Ward mentioned, maybe a segment of the water body that would have a particular beneficial use for intentional drinking or recreation, and keep our current standard or other water bodies or segments that we would relax the standard. Next year, we're going to start listening sessions. We will host them, have the public input. We will have another field season. 2015 will be a field season, narrowing down these very questions that we're coming up with. But we hope to complete our data collection in the 2015 field season, complete our evaluation of those data and everything that's gone before sometime in the spring of 2016, perform the basin planning amendment process, including the CEQA process, during 2016, so that we can come before you in late 2016 or early 2017 for a possible adoption of these beneficial use / water quality objective proposals. The one caveat, though, I have to mention on this last schedule is that as we integrate our process with State Board, their schedule isn't quite this ambitious. They may not be ready to make their proposals until sometime after early 2017, and if so, then we may delay that so that we can coordinate and integrate with them. And I see members nodding their head. I'm sure you appreciate the necessity of that. So I'm going to conclude here with two questions that you may provide input if you wish, or discussion as you see fit, about our idea of should we have areas that are protected for intentional consumption? Should we have areas that we would consider relaxing our existing standard? Thank you.
Questions for either Mr. Booth or Dr. Warden? Mr. Dias?
No, thank you.
Mr. Sandel?
No. The presentations were clear enough. I don't have questions. We can start discussing anytime.
Ms. Cox?
I'm going to invoke being the new kid on the block again. Why was the standard set at 20 to begin with? Can I have some background on that?
Absolutely. 1975, when a standard was... when our basin plans had to have standards, because the point of the basin plan is to have beneficial use with the supporting water quality objectives. 20 fecal coliform was thought to be, and I might get some other folks with more history on this, indicative of what a background or what a wildlife influence of bacteria would be across the region. It obviously varies. Some water bodies have single-digit fecal coliform concentrations and have some have exceedance of 20, even with natural and wildlife influence. But the 20 was thought to be what would be protective, would be uncontrollable wildlife type standard. And the desire of the Water Board at the time was to have that protective standard apply to all of our water bodies. So you could think of it as a background, but I will deny I ever said that if I get down to a public meeting.
Thank you. That is helpful, and I've been kind of excited to have this discussion because it's an item of real complexity as you look at our area. And as it relates to protect water for intentional consumption, you know, I've been hiking a lot in the Eastern Sierras, and if you don't know enough to take your filter with you, maybe you shouldn't be left alone in the wilderness. just a thought.
Well, that actually is... can be one of the rationale that you and we in our proposals would want to consider when we set a beneficial use. Because after all, what is the public's expectation? That's part of why we're here. So what the public may expect or not would definitely be a consideration.
When you go to the ranger stations for your day or overnight permits to access these marvelous areas, they always give you information on the water quality and what you need to do to protect yourself from undesirable side effects.
Right.
Mr. Jardine?
I have no questions, just some observations.
Okay. Let's have questions first.
I don't have any questions.
No? Do I have any questions? No. I guess we're ready for discussion. So we'll start it back down with you.
Yes. I think the 20 parts throughout the region is unreasonably high. You know, I think we're on the right track. Your next steps as proposed are on track. I agree with you, Kimberly, that if you go in the backcountry, you better be prepared, you know, up in the high country. So it... I think there needs to be a matrix. Yeah, I think time schedules appropriate.
Matrix as in various uses of the water and protective bacteria standards?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Well, I think the answers to your questions just generally are yes, maybe, because there's not... These are interesting items for discussion. There's not enough information to actually answer the question. I think that the answer to number two is, yeah, there are places where the standard just doesn't make any sense, but I'm not sure that here tonight we're in a position to say where those are.
No.
I would appreciate it, though, when we get to the point where we are going to answer where those are, that we as a board, or me as a person, maybe more specifically, have a fairly spelled out set of questions to answer this question. What are the kinds of things that would make a specific area unique enough to justify relaxing the standard. As to the protecting for intentional consumption, I just can't imagine how you would make a determination of what areas to protect, identify what areas are likely to be used for intentional consumption. In the backcountry, I doubt that many of them have ever been sampled. And so we're not even sure what we're protecting people from. But there's no way to really answer that question unless there's a proposal. So I think that I don't think anybody's here because they don't have a healthy, in all senses of the word, respect for the quality of the water that we have in the region. And so I don't think there's anybody here who would willy-nilly backtrack on the existing quality of the water in the region. That being said, it's just a question of looking at those places where the quality isn't what we think it is, seeing whether or not we think it could be brought to the quality that we want it to be, once we know why that is, or whether it makes sense to say, you know, this is what it is, and the plan should comport more to the reality of the situation on the ground.
Thank you. That's helpful. And if I may mention, I don't think Dr. Warden and I have the ability, I can't speak for you, Dr. Warden, but I don't have the ability to emphasize how much work our staff has done to collect these samples. And in fact, remote sample locations is one of the extreme logistical problems that they have dealt with, including handoff of samples, having a temporary lab set up at a strategic location near the town of Independence, getting with the counties for any laboratory work they have so that we can make this eight-hour hold time that Dr. Ward mentioned to get from the high country where we know that there are either hardly anybody goes and it's a good background site to places where only the hardcore backpackers go try to get some idea of what the bacteria samples would be there. So we're trying that. Obviously not in every place, but we are trying to get these remote location samples.
And it may be a way to look at that question. I mean, when you mentioned Independence, I'm assuming that maybe you're thinking of Onion Valley and areas where there is concentrated use. And I think that the Forest Service, at least, because it's going through its planning process right now, it's done a lot of data assemblage of where those areas of concentrated use are that may or may not translate into something concerning water quality. But, I mean, intentional consumption in the backcountry is wherever you are when you're thirsty and there's water. And that means that there's many, 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 many places, and I don't know how you would narrow them down.
Working on that. Thank you.
Mr. Dias?
For question one, no, I don't believe we should designate areas for intentional consumption. For question two, yes, there are probably areas where we can relax the standard, but I could not pinpoint them. Thank you.
Mr. Sandel?
Yeah, that pretty much, I agree with both Keith and Peter. The protection for intentional consumption just, I think where we know we have good quality water, we should try to keep it that way. But to say, you know, for us to say, yeah, we think this is good enough that you could drink it safely, I can't see us doing that.
Ms. Cox?
I would agree with that, and I really look forward to the dialogue on this and just a hearty discussion on if we change the standard in some areas, what are the impacts, and then the whole dialogue on the beneficial use for particular waters.
And I'm sorry, by impacts, you're referring to the impacts of the water quality itself or impacts for the land uses and the people that live there?
The impacts on the land uses. Okay. As we consider a change in the standard. First of all, I'd like to say kudos to the staff. I know this has been a tremendous effort above and beyond everything else you have on your plate, and you've prepared a tremendous amount of information for us to consider. I think this goes to the heart of what our job is as regulators. And knowing what the baseline water quality is important. And I look at these graphs here, and it's like the numbers are just so low. It's like 1, 2, 3 fecal coliforms. So, I mean, numbers that come in well below our standard of 20. And it seems illogical to me to say, well, because some people or some places are exceeding the standard, we should raise the standard. I mean, it's like what? We need to be taking a rational approach to this, as Mr. Pumphrey said, to find out why the standard is being exceeded there and whether it can be brought into line. And if not, whether there are places where it just makes sense to raise the standard, but do it on a case-by-case basis. I had a long conversation over the summer with the director of the Water Quality Division for the State Water Resources Board, and, you know, the comment was, well, you have a big problem in Manhattan because of your fecal coliform standard. And I said, what's the problem? Well, it's so low. And I said, yeah, but that's what the water quality is through most of the region. And, well, no, we want a statewide standard of 100 fecal coliform units per, you know. And well, why? Well, so there's consistency. Well, what's the, what, why? Why is that important, you know? And, I mean, that was the reason. They wanted consistency. And that doesn't make sense to me as an approach for making policy. I really like that. I hadn't heard the idea that you want to do listening sessions. I think that's really important, because what I see happening is one interest group has the ear of people in Sacramento, and I can think of lots of other people who are also very concerned about this who don't have the ear of people in Sacramento, who may have a very different perspective on this question. And so going out and getting the opinion of people who are involved in tourism activities in the High Sierra. You know, I've been out with people from Europe who just go drink out of the stream because that's what they do in Europe. And they don't understand that we don't have the same water quality regulation here that they have in the Alps. And
I mean, I'm just going, oh my God, you can't do that here, you know, but they don't understand that. We have a lot of people coming here from Europe to experience our backcountry. It makes no sense to me to raise the level just willy-nilly. So I think it would be great to forward this information that your staff has gathered, put together a letter, and send it to the State Water Resources Control Board, providing them with the data that we have gathered so far, and express that we as a board feel it's very important to maintain the high quality of our waters where they have high quality, and that we're willing to look at places on a case-by-case basis where the standard is too restrictive, and based on scientific information, consider what a more reasonable standard might be in those specific places. That's my proposal. Any thoughts?
I like the way you said it all. certain amount of passion there. I didn't realize that the Europeans had a higher standard for water quality out in the outback, such as it is there, than we do. It would be interesting to document that as part of this effort.
Any other comments? Okay. I guess we're ready for dinner.
Thank you very much for your input. Particularly working through your dinner hour.
Thanks for your work.
Sorry.